June 30th, 2023, 1625 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Word Green with you again today. We've got a quote from Mark Twain. It goes like this. Nothing so needs reforming as other people's habits. And our song for today is from 1975, originally released in December of 1974, and charted in 1975 as number 3 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and number 6 on Canada's RPM Top Singles. No other charts for other countries. Could mean it wasn't released in other countries, but Grand Funk Railroad is an American band. The writer of the song originally was the Soul Brothers Six, who released it in 1967, and it peaked at 91 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 in the year 1967, or sometime thereafter, I suppose, if it was released late in 67. But we're not concerned with their version. We're concerned with Grand Funk Railroad, and this is Grand Funk Railroad from 1975 with the song Some Kind of Wonderful. From 1975, for the most part, the chart was 1975. So, our article for today, the paragraph is paragraph from Part 2, Chapter 12, Paragraph 11, in the Wild Road Ahead to History article. We're very quickly approaching the end of the article. Now, much has been written on the subject of the journey of Israel during their exodus from Egypt, and much of it is to do with the identification of Mount Sinai, right? That's the holy mountain, or the place also called Horeb, where Moses originally saw the thorn bush burning, the burning bush. For the remainder of the chapter, we would focus on the later wanderings of Israel after they left Sinai, after they had left Sinai. Now, the identification. Apart from the identification of Kadesh Barnea, or Kadesh Barnea, one may identify the Sinai exit as the single most significant location and most difficult passage of that journey. And that means we're not talking about the exit from the mountain, Mount Sinai. We're talking about the exit from Sinai Peninsula, because the terrain in the Sinai Peninsula is not very navigable for wagons. And let's read further here. For the passage of an Israelite host of the size which the Bible presents to be believable must need to be quite attainable to all accompanying creatures with wagons. Here the evidence of all the Israelites in Sinai comes to perhaps some sort of head at Wadi el-Habibi, this being the location of the remains of a large camp, the telling nature of which is a fit for Kibroth Hatteava. Now, footnote number 2 refers to the book, The Desert of the Exodus. Kibroth Hatteava is a Bible location, which we haven't come to in our reading of the Bible yet, but the oral legend of Wadi el-Habibi, or this actual location where there is a large camp, showing remains thereof, that is, you know, the remains of a large camp. That oral legend is related by the Arabs as a big Hajj, H-A-double-J, described by Mr. Palmer in the book, which is footnote number 2, The Desert of the Exodus, Journeys on Foot, Volume 1 by Edward Henry Palmer. It goes from about page 255 all the way up to page 260, if you want to read that section of the book. And Mr. Palmer asserts something here, but let me get back to where it's oral legend, right? Described by Mr. Palmer as a feast, with the word feast in quotations, of Exodus 5 and 1. There's a feast of Exodus 5 and 1. Remember when the Israelites wanted to leave and go and celebrate a feast in the wilderness, and that's what they told Pharaoh. So this, Mr. Palmer says, is that feast. Though Hazeroth, like all of the Bible's Exodus stations, given at Numbers chapter 33. Now, Hazeroth is in the name of one of the stations. That name may not be universally accepted as the site of Ein Hudera, or Hutera, in the region of eastern Sinai. It is, quote, unquote, exactly a day's journey, in Palmer's words, from the Big Hajj, Hebrew Hag, H-A-double-G, from that site, from the Big Hajj site, or hag site. It's only one day away to get to Ein Hodera, which is interesting. Okay, which is Haziroth in the Bible, according to. Perhaps not everybody agrees, but it's certainly been identified by many people. And just look at the word Hodera, Haziroth, Zed being very related to the DH or a TH, closely related. In Spanish, for example, it's a TH sound, the Zed. So Hodera and Haziroth are very similar words. And Hodera, similar to Hodera. So a day away from this site of this big camp, which is evidently Kibroth HaTeva, we have the site called Haziroth. Are we going to look at that in Numbers? We should look at it, I think. But I don't think we'll look at it. I think you can look that up. I've done all that before. I've done it many times. I've looked it up over and over and over. But I just don't think we need to cover. It's too onerous, you know, it consumes a lot of energy if we have to look everything up. But this is a Bible site, Haziroth, and so is Kibroth HaTeva. I'm just going by my memory. Now, Mr. Palmer asserts that the Arabs recite, quote, in precisely the same words, end quote, their own oral tradition, and that the Arab word for, in brackets, Mohammedan, end bracket, quote, unquote, Hajj, originates in, quote, unquote, Hag in the Hebrew language, this being the same expression, quote, unquote, Shagag, given by Moses at Exodus 10:9 as the reason for quitting Egypt, that they may keep a feast. Now I'm curious, what about Exodus 5 and 1? What does that say? Are we going to look it up? No, we're not. That they may keep a feast. About two-thirds of the way across the Sinai Peninsula from the west is Wadi Mura. And Wadi Habibi may be beside it. I'm going to show you that on a map here. That's the book. Yeah, that's the book, right. This is the book. Ein Hodera. See that? Exactly a day's journey, it says. This is the book by Mr. Palmer, to which we just referred. He mentions Ein Hodera, which is Haziroth, as we identify it, being exactly a day's journey away from this place where the camp, large camp, remnants are still found today, or at the time the book was written, in the 1800s. So, but it's not surprising that it would remain that long, because as is noted somewhere also in this book, which is really interesting to read, it's a fascinating book. It's a fascinating book. Even just read the chapter in which all of this is written, it's enormously interesting. There's even a place where he talks about the Arabs being seized with great fear, and because they had to descend through a certain mountain pass or a certain downhill portion of the trail, which the author says wasn't that difficult at all, but the Arabs were so fearful that they were begging to be allowed to lie down and die, the permission for which was cheerfully granted, he said. But it's a very interesting, fascinating book. And, of course, they all got down safely. It wasn't that dangerous in that case. But it's a wonderful story about Mr. Palmer's retracing of the Bible path, the Exodus path, the wanderings of the Israelites after the Exodus from Egypt. So, it's interesting that this Wadi Habibi is probably, yeah, right, okay. So Wadi Habibi, that's what we need to look at on the map. The next one, here's this one, okay. So Wadi Habibi. Are we going to see that? Let me just see. Oh, that might look, yeah, white on black. This will look hopefully correct, yeah. So Wadi Habibi, here we have Hazeroth on the map. So this is on the eastern part of the Sinai. There's the Red Sea right here. This is the Red Sea just shown there. I can even, maybe I can just go, no. I don't want to upset this display here. But the Red Sea is right to the right here. You can see it, the coastline. There's Hazeroth. There's Wadi Ajabi. And there's Wadi Mura. No, so just south here, I even wrote this in my notebook number 33 on page 109. I looked it up today. I wrote down that this location here is probably near where Wadi Habibi is, somewhere, and it's one of these wadis somewhere around this vicinity of this area just south of Wadi Mura. Because on the scale of the map, that's about 12 Roman miles, that distance, which is one day's journey, at least as the crow flies, right there. And they're walking in a pretty straight line, it looks like, here on this pass. So, well, this is the pass that Mr. Murray took. This could have been the path taken by the Israelites. But the necessity of the whole, navigability of the path is that all of the thousands and thousands and thousands, maybe in hundreds of thousands of Israelites, because some of them were, of course, slaughtered in the wilderness by Jehovah at different points. They started out as millions. Maybe they were still millions at this point, but all of them had to be able to traverse the terrain. And there were very few places in the Sinai where this could be achieved. So going through Hazeroth was one way, or this Ein Hudera was one way. It was the most navigable, maybe the only navigable way they could exit from the Sinai as the caravan that they were, with wagons and various things. So this is strengthened. Okay, let's carry on. The scene described by Mr. Palmer as Ein Hudera has a great outlook in many respects as biblical as Hazeroth. That's right. Wadi Habibi may be beside Wadi Mura, it looks like, to the southwest of Wadi Mura. And Ein Hudera has a great outlook as described by Mr. Palmer. As being the biblical Hazeroth, which is strengthened by what Mr. Stanley writes of the quote, table plain Haramat Hagag. Where's the end quote? Oh, it's further down. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is a long quote. Mr. Stanley writes that, quote, table plain Haramat Hagag, in brackets, compare with Hag and Haj as above, a proposed site of Kibroth Hatteava, end bracket, between the Wadi Seyal, that's an editorial bracket, by the way, between the Wadi Seyal, and now editorial bracket, compare Sal, or with two A's, or Sal with one A, the east-west valley leading to Wadi Mura from central Sinai, on the map, Seyal, being right here, the word Sal, Wadi Sal. And the Wadi El Ain, the east-west valley to Wadi Mura from central Sinai, end bracket, and the Wadi El Ain, editorial bracket, but on the map 15 miles due north of Ein Hudera, end bracket. Right. The rock which stands at the end of this plain. So let's just read what he said. Table plain Haramat Hagag, between the Wadi Seyal and the Wadi El Ain, the rock which stands at the end of this plain has more in proportion than any other spot I've seen. And there are some in the sandstone labyrinths near it, in brackets, near Haramat Hagag, referring to the profusion of Sinaitic inscriptions, end bracket and end quote. So there are some of these inscriptions. So that's more proof that we have the right location there for this place. Haramat Hagag, right? That's the end of our study for today in the Wild Road article. But it's interesting in the book, you know. When you read this book, you see, I had to read it all today from page 255 or even the beginning of the chapter, because I needed to know which direction they were going on their one-day journey, so to find out where this place Habibi was. So when we go back, I went all the way back to the beginning of the chapter, I believe. Is this still it? Or have I missed it? Let's see. Where are you? Oh yeah, it goes further back. So it goes way back. It's beginning of, there it is, the outlying districts of Sinai. They began to go from Jebel Om Shomer, or Shomer, which is on the map. Let's see what we can do with this map. Oh, there it is. Right. It's just south of here. It's south of the monastery where they were staying, which is on the mountain called Jebel Katherin. And it's Om Shomer. Om Shomer, right there. Jebel Om Shomer, the bottom here. So they went there first, and then they talked about walking, beginning their journey, so they were going along this route. And then in the book, you will note that there are, there's a mention of only very few places on the map, because the map doesn't have many places, but the Wadi Saul is mentioned, or Saul. And eventually they arrive at, and there's a few other places on the map that are mentioned too, but very few. And then we see Hazeroth they arrive at. So the one-day journey before Hazeroth on this road, somewhere around the Wadi Mura, or a little bit maybe south, or southwest, that's where they found this graveyard of an encampment. But there were a lot of people killed there also for their craving, their selfish craving. That's why it was called Kibroth HaTeava in the Bible. So it was another place where many of the Israelites died in the wilderness for their disobedience or for their sin, right? Okay. And imagine this wilderness, how hot it must have been and how wild it was and all the problems they must have had. But that's it for our study for today. And this book by Mr. Palmer is absolutely fascinating book. Reading that chapter, it's so detailed and so exquisitely written with its descriptive power. It's beautiful to read. But that's, I guess, mainly for people who understand English. Apologies to all the others. So, our next study is our scripture for today, which is Proverbs 20:3. It is a glory for a man to desist from disputing, but everyone foolish will burst out in it. It is a glory for a man to desist from disputing, but everyone foolish will burst out in it. Numbers chapter 3. Now, are we going to read this, or are we going to read Acts chapter 10? Because I don't think we have time to do both, but we might. Now, these were the generations of Aaron and Moses in the day that Jehovah spoke with Moses in Mount Sinai. And these were the names of Aaron's sons: the firstborn, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These were the names of Aaron's sons, the anointed priests whose hands had been filled with power to act as priests. However, Nadab and Abihu died before Jehovah when they offered illegitimate fire before Jehovah in the wilderness of Sinai, and they did not come to have any sons. But Eleazar and Ithamar continued to act as priests along with Aaron their father. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses, saying, "Bring the tribe of Levi near, and you must stand them before Aaron the priest, and they must minister to him. And they must keep their obligation to him and their obligation to all the assembly before the tent of meeting in discharging the service of the tabernacle, all the tribe of Levi. And they must take care of all the utensils of the tent of meeting, even the obligation of the sons of Israel in discharging the service of the tabernacle. And you must give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They are given ones given to him from the sons of Israel. And you should appoint Aaron and his sons, and they must take care of their priesthood. And any stranger coming near should be put to death." And Jehovah continued to speak to Moses, saying, "As for me, look, I do take the Levites from among the sons of Israel in place of all the firstborn opening the womb of the sons of Israel, and the Levites must become mine. For every firstborn is mine. In the day that I struck every firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified to myself every firstborn in Israel, from man to beast. They should become mine. I am Jehovah." And Jehovah spoke further to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, "Register the sons of Levi according to the house of their fathers by their families. Every male from a month old upward you should register." And Moses began to register them at the order of Jehovah, just as he had been commanded. And these came to be the sons of Levi by their names, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. Now these were the names of the sons of Gershon by their families, Libni and Shimei. Really, Shimei, or Shimei, possibly. And the sons of Kohath by their families were Amram and Izhar, Hebron and Uziel. And the sons of Merari by their families were Mahli and Mushi. These were the families of the Levites according to the house of their fathers. Of Gershon, there were the family of the Libnites and the family of the Shimeites. These were the families of the Gershonites. Their registered ones were by number of all males from a month old upward. Their registered ones were 7,500. The families of the Gershonites were behind the tabernacle. They were encamped to the west. And the chieftain of the paternal house of the Gershonites was Eliasaph, the son of Lael. And the obligation of the sons of Gershon in the tent of meeting with the tabernacle and the tent, its covering and the screen of the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the hangings of the courtyard and the screen of the entrance of the courtyard that is round about the tabernacle, and the altar and its tent cords for all its service. And of Kohath, there were the family of the Amramites, and the family of the Izharites, and the family of the Hebronites, and the family of the Uzielites. These were the families of the Kohathites. Among the number of all the males from a month old upward, there were 8,600, taking care of the obligation to the holy place. The families of the sons of Kohath were encamped on the side of the tabernacle to the south. And the chieftain of the paternal house for the families of the Kohathites was Elizaphan, the son of Uziel. And their obligation was the ark and the table and the lampstand and the altars and the utensils of the holy place with which they would minister, and the screen and all its service. So that's the screen inside the, or is it the outside one? Let's see. Well, we click on that. Well, we already see the Israelites. That's right. We go back. The screen for the entrance of the courtyard, right? The screen of the entrance of the tent of meeting. There it is. That was the obligation of the sons of Gershon. So this is not the screen of the entrance of the tent of meeting here. In verse 31, this is the screen inside the tent of meeting, which screened off from the most holy place and all its service of these things inside the first holy place, the first place inside, the first place you come to inside if you're a priest, inside the tent of meeting. So the screen was the inner screen. And the chieftain of the chieftains of the Levites was Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, who had the oversight of those taking care of the obligation of the holy place. Of Merari, there were the family of the Mahlites and the family of the Mushites. These were the families of Merari, and their registered ones, by the number of all the males from a month old upward, were 6,200. And the chieftain of the paternal house for the families of Merari were Zuriel, the son of Abihail. They were encamped on the side of the tabernacle toward the north, and the oversight for which the sons of Merari were obligated was over the panel frames of the tabernacle, and its bars, and its pillars, and its socket pedestals, and all its utensils, and all its service, and the pillars of the courtyard round about, and their socket pedestals, and their tent pins, and their tent cords. And those camping before the tabernacle toward the east, before the tent of meeting toward the sun rising, were Moses and Aaron and his sons, those taking care of the obligation to the sanctuary, as the obligation for the sons of Israel. And any stranger coming near would be put to death. All the registered ones of the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron registered at the order of Jehovah by their families, all the males from a month old upward, were 22,000. You can add all those up and see if you get the exact same number. Then Jehovah said to Moses, register all the firstborn males of the sons of Israel from a month old upward and take the number of their names. And you must take the Levites for me. I am Jehovah. In place of all the firstborn among the sons of Israel and the domestic animals of the Levites, in place of all the firstborn among the domestic animals of the sons of Israel. And Moses proceeded just as Jehovah had commanded him to register all the firstborn among the sons of Israel and all the firstborn males by the number of the names from a month old upward of their registered ones came to be 22,273. And Jehovah continued to speak to Moses, saying, take the Levites in place of all the firstborn among the sons of Israel, and the domestic animals of the Levites in place of their domestic animals, and the Levites must become mine. I am Jehovah. And as the ransom price of the 273 from the firstborn of the sons of Israel, who are in excess of the Levites, since they were the firstborn, belong to Jehovah, you must take 5 shekels for each individual. In the shekel of the holy place you should take it. A shekel is 20 gerahs, and you must give the money to Aaron and his sons as the ransom price of those who are in excess of them. So Moses took the money of the redemption. So Moses took the money of the redemption price from those who were in excess of the ransom price of the Levites. From the firstborn of the sons of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels, 5 times 273. 5 times 200 is 1,000. 5 times 70 is 350. 5 times 3 is 15. Add them all up. 1,365 shekels in the shekel of the holy place. Then Moses gave the money of the ransom price to Aaron and his sons according to the order of Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. So Moses took the money of the redemption price. That's hard to say. And so Moses took the money of the redemption price. I still can't say it without really, really concentrating on it if I want to get it right. Okay, let's read Acts chapter 10, very historic chapter, if we have time. Oh, we're done. Well, you can read that as a homework assignment. Maybe we'll read it next time. We are actually done. I love you very much. Have a wonderful day, and I hope you enjoyed the study as I did. Also, this is Willie in my behalf, and also Moppy saying, bye for now.